Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Daily Roto Hour here on Sports Grid TV. You also might be listening to this on the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I am joined by Colin Drew, as always, although he got a week off last week with Andrew Barron stepping in. And, last week, just another, honestly, just a very chalk-tastic week, Colin. We had the Buffalo-Arizona game go crazy. I guess the one letdown was Russ was fine, but not good enough in the context of the slate. And then both Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf were disappointing relative to, you know, what some of the other high-end wide receivers did.
Yeah, I mean, you had the chalk running backs bust as well, I'd say. Well, at least the value ones. Mike Davis was still on some winning tournament lineups because of the salary he afforded you. Duke Johnson got the workload, didn't do anything with it. And, I mean, that was one of the crazy things last week was just as you get some of these inclement weather games, you're getting a very wide range of outcomes as far as what they're producing.
Yeah. So, but this week, you know, we don't have anything like that. We don't have one Mike Davis-esque play. I don't really think that we have one game that's going to draw in attention the way that Buffalo-Arizona drew in attention last week. You know, we have, we'll talk about this as we go through the show, but Patrick Mahomes, Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, and Josh Allen, they're, none of them are on the main slate, right? And so that really spreads out stacks. That really spreads out ownership in terms of the quarterback position. So it's it really is kind of a play whoever you want spot. I think that no one will be chalky enough to want to be off of them, really kind of to me, other than Dalvin Cook.
Yeah, and Dalvin Cook, I mean, obviously he's going to get a dream matchup. And the only question is the workload. And you know he's going to get his 20 touches, but will they put Dallas away to a point where they don't have to ride him heavily in the second half, or will Dallas be able to keep it competitive with Andy Dalton back? And I definitely agree with you. It seems like Cook will be the highest owned player on the slate. And beyond that, I don't think anyone's going to command material ownership, just pending any late injury news.
Yep. So as always on this show, we go game by game through every game in the main NFL daily fantasy slate on Sunday for FanDuel and DraftKings. And we can start with a game that I think gets really underowned relative to kind of how I am viewing the players in this game, and that is the Pittsburgh Steelers at the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think, you know, kind of an interesting tournament rule is just every lineup, at least one of Deontay Johnson, Chase Claypool, and Juju Smith-Schuster. Like, it feels like every single week, one of those guys is putting up 25-plus. And oftentimes, I mean, I believe all of them scored once last week. And I think that there's a stretch now of at least two of them having 15 or more PPR points. I mean, these guys just kind of look like the nuts.
I mean, yeah, it's an awesome game to stack. It was in double stacking Big Ben with two of these guys. Really viable strategy as well. And it seems like they're willing to throw. I love Ben took the week off leading into the game, and he's lobbying to take the week off every week because of how well they played last week. And the harder thing, like you said, is just choosing one of them. Like, if you're only going to build one lineup, are you going with Deontay Johnson or Juju or Claypool? And I feel like that's the tough thing. And definitely in MME, a little bit easier decision. In like a single entry three max, they're great plays. It's just hard to narrow in each week because it does seem to rotate a little bit and obviously a lot of volatility. So I think in optimizer settings, I like to dial up the volatility in these guys just to make sure they get into my mix a little bit more.
Do you want to be on the record as choosing a favorite one for this slate against Jacksonville?
It doesn't feel like, I mean, I can give you an answer for it if you need one, but it just doesn't feel like choosing one makes sense. I would go with the cheaper guy. So Deontay Johnson.
So I think my opinion is obviously all of them, I think, are like, you know, top 15 DFS plays, which is crazy to have three guys all on the same team feel that way. But I think Claypool is the one I said Smith-Schuster yesterday on the Swolecast, but I've kind of been thinking about it. And I think that's wrong because I think Smith-Schuster does need a lot of volume to get there. And, you know, I don't know if that is true as it pertains to Chase Claypool, right? I think Chase Claypool can probably get in optimal lineups with, you know, something like five targets because he could get two touchdowns on those targets. So I think that Claypool is the answer. Now on the Jacksonville side, do you think that this is a good correlation spot, right? Do we think that James Robinson at super depressed ownership is a play? Do we think DJ Shark is a play? Do we think Keelan Cole Sr. is a play? I mean, these guys are all really cheap, and I would be shocked to see Shark come in above, you know, 3% or something like that.
Yeah, and I think in the Daily Roto ownership projections, we have him right there right now, 3 or 4%. And I think that's probably fair. That's the hardest thing about stacking Pittsburgh is, like, their defense has been so good throughout the course of the season that you're getting teams with like 18 point totals that you're trying to find bringbacks that way. And I guess that's the one thing that kind of keeps me off of the game stack as being like a primary play, is just trying to find that way to bring it back. And I do think Chark would be the natural guy to do it with, but I would use key boosts for this team more so than forcing a bringback.
Yeah. And then, I mean, James Robinson, we're talking about three straight games with 26 or more touches. Matchups don't really seem to matter to how much they want to use him. And he's cheap, especially on DraftKings this week. Would you use James Robinson in single entry or three max this week?
I think he's like flirting with the three max cut line at that price. And it does feel like the type of week where, I mean, there's a payoff option, obviously, with Cook, but paying up money is tougher this week to come by. And so I think kind of zoning in on that mid-tier can for sure be fruitful. And Robinson's one of those guys that should be involved regardless of game script for Jacksonville.
I guess one of the things I'm thinking about as we're talking through this is, you know, Ezekiel Elliott is $100 more. And I know James Robinson has been better than Zeke this year, but it probably in like hand builds, it would be harder for me to click on James Robinson in a bad matchup than Ezekiel Elliott in a good matchup. Right. Yeah. So I probably, you know, maybe I'm kidding myself a little bit with Robinson to Tennessee and Baltimore. You know, this is the immovable force meets the very movable object of the Tennessee Titans defense. Can we trust Lamar? Lamar is the most expensive quarterback on the slate on DraftKings, but at only 7,300. I mean, you in this matchup last year, Lamar Jackson would have been 35% owned in tournaments at this price against the Titans. But, you know, the public has lost faith. We don't like Marquise Brown. We don't like Mark Andrews particularly all that much, and no Ravens running back feels playable at all.
Yeah, the Ravens running back, I mean, clear three-headed timeshare. Mark Ingram coming back last week, and none of the running backs had more than seven carries, despite the fact that they were playing in these near-hurricane conditions against New England. And so if they get ahead, like, they'll definitely run the ball more, but these RBs, they're pretty much capped at, like, 10 to 12 touches, which isn't great from a DFS perspective. And it's also, you're not getting consistent goal line usage out of either of them either. So they're all kind of potentially involved in the goal line. Lamar does have 10 or more carries each of the previous 3 weeks. So I think you're starting to see that rushing ceiling creep back into the game and into the game plans for them, potentially because he's less injured than he was to start the season, and potentially just trying to improve the way that they're utilizing him. So I think that Lamar Andrews stacks are definitely viable. I don't think the Boyle injury necessarily changes anything for Andrews. And so guy with a couple multi-touchdown games that is at one of his cheaper prices, 4,900, pretty reasonable single stack for these guys.
I actually think if the Boyle injury changes anything for anyone, it's Devin Duvernay. I think that in practice this week, they would focus on more 11 personnel and empty stuff with Duvernay coming in for Boyle. Not that you would play Duvernay. I mean, maybe if this was like a showdown slate. To get into the weeds.
What about MME? Are you playing Willie Snead at all? And this isn't a chase, but he's got like 22% of the team's targets over the previous 4 weeks. So multi-touchdown game, obviously unlikely, but like punting a wide receiver position or just no?
No, I would double stack Hollywood Brown and Mark Andrews before I would single stack Lamar and Willie Snead. I can't do that to myself. I can't be, you know, throwing Hollywood Brown into the gutter like that.
Yeah. Hollywood Brown has just been in the gutter all season. So that is the guy that is still priced at a point where, like, he's going to be 3% owned as well.
Oh, I mean, I think that maybe even seems high. Like, but on the other side of this game, the grown man, A.J. Brown, coming off his worst game of the year, 4 targets, 1 reception, 21 yards, and then a dropped 70-yard touchdown as well. He's got a bad wide receiver cornerback matchup this week, of course, against Marlon Humphrey. A.J. Brown, to me, looks like an incredibly good. Like, if you played Lamar, Mark Andrews, A.J. Brown is like the nut bring back there to me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm obviously going to stand for Corey Davis on FanDuel. Pretty nice price tag over on that site. A little tougher squeeze on DK. So I think you're probably right. I guess the big dog, like, he's going to be 5%, right?
Lower. I mean, the big dog, I played the big dog against the Steelers in the $100 spy, whenever that was, you know, just under the philosophy of, like, this is the only way that the Titans can score, the only way they'd be able to win this game. Turned out it wasn't true. Corey Davis went off in that game, and he was 0.9% owned in the single entry $100 on DraftKings. So, like, that gives you a feel of what people are going to be doing with the big dog this week.
Yeah, I mean you did see, like, the Ravens lost their nose tackle in that game against the Patriots. Not sure the status coming into this week, and you saw the Patriots just absolutely gashing Baltimore on the ground. So it's tough to get there with the big dog, but I think it's at least somewhat possible.
Yeah, I mean, AJ Brown and big dog, like, I'm not going to debase myself in talking about Anthony Firkser. So we can move on now to the New England Patriots at Houston Texans. And, you know, because this is not really a great slate at all, this actually looks like one of the games where we're going to be getting a fair amount of plays from, right? So New England, we have Cam Newton and Jacoby Myers, maybe Damian Harris on FanDuel. For the Texans, we have Deshaun, we have Fuller, we have Cooks, even Jordan Akins, and then, you know, Duke Johnson. What do we do with Duke Johnson after he played, I think, 94% of the Texans snaps last week? He was the only running back to record a rush. CJ Procise had one target. But, you know, do we go back to the well this week with Duke Johnson? I actually kind of think the answer is yes, by the way. Many people are going to be very off of Duke Johnson, but I think I'm probably back in on him this week.
Yeah, the Duke Johnson, I mean, the usage was there, and I think that's probably the most important thing. Definitely one of the potential misses as far as projections last week wasn't necessarily Duke Johnson's role in the split in the offense, but just the overall game environment, the potential for that to tank. And in a dome, it feels less likely that the game environment's at risk. So I do think going back to Duke Johnson makes sense, and it'll probably be a little bit depressed as far as utilization from the field. I mean, Cam Newton, one of the top quarterback values on this entire slate. Even when the Patriots offense was sputtering, and they definitely have sputtered at times this season, they were still getting there with Cam. And so he had one game, I think, where he put up maybe 12 DK points. But for the most part, he's had like a 16-point floor, kind of in that 16 to 25-point range. And then the ceiling is there because of the rushing touchdowns and the upside. So, I mean, I think Cam is a really good value. It's just when Cam hits, he doesn't necessarily bring along the rest of your team with him. Jacoby Myers seeing an absurd target rate, but still not a situation you're really comfortable with. If you were going to stack Cam, it's probably Myers, but I think you could consider naked Cam.
I was writing this in my article on Daily Roto this week, but, like, that's something you're going to hear people say this week is, like, oh, this is a really good week for naked quarterback. But I just don't think it ever is, because the whole idea for stacking, like, actually becomes more important in these weeks when people are less willing to make those stands. Like, when Seattle has like a 42-point team total, you know, everyone in their donkey has Russell Wilson stacked with Metcalf or Lockett and a bring back. But that strategy, especially double stacks, is going to be super non-common this week. So it's going to be, you're going to have an even bigger advantage than normal over the field using correlation this week, I think.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. So if you're going to do that, then I think Myers is really the only play. He's got like 38% of the team's targets over the previous 4 weeks. You're not really double stacking Cam because he's not throwing the ball enough to get there with a double stack. And so you're probably looking at fading Cam then rather than like trying to find a way to game stack it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would rather use Myers as a one-off, or even better, using Myers as a little correlation with Fuller and Cooks, right? So you do, you know, you do whatever other game stack you like, and then you use Fuller and Cooks as like the little one-to-one correlation there. I actually don't hate that idea at all.
Do you like the Houston passing game here at all? Is it seems like you're leaning more towards one-off pieces versus stacking Watson and...
I you know, our projections are pretty high on Watson, and, you know, when I get down to building stuff, I might decide, because, like, $6,500 for him is also, you know, pretty affordable, and he does always have a little bit of that rushing upside. I guess, you know, it's early, and I'm not quite decided on these things yet. My lean is probably that it ends up getting a little bit overowned, so I'll likely go a different direction, but, you know, I don't hate it or anything like that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And it's pretty interesting the way projections work out. We're either like low on Duke Johnson or like Watson's rushing touchdown is inflated. So
absurd.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of those two guys is definitely a really strong value this week. It's just, it's tough to figure out how that rushing game is going to shake out.
So Damian Harris now, I mean, you know, you don't want to get your hand in the dirt too far or anything, but,
but like, you're in, you're deep.
I mean, he's been incredible, right? First game back off of the short-term IR, 17 for 100 on the ground. Then he had 22 for 121 against the Ravens. I guess the big criticism you would levy towards him is, like, he's probably, like, never scoring a rushing touchdown, right? Like, he has 220 carries over the course of the year, but two rushing touchdowns because every time they're on the 4-yard line, Cam just runs him in instead.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's for sure the concern. And there's no passing upside for him either. They're just not throwing the ball enough. When they do throw, it's not necessarily to Damian Harris. And so I think that's the other concern. You basically lose out on so many of those red zone carries, and then you lose out on the passing game, and you're looking at a guy he's got to find a way there with a big play. And, you know, even around the goal line, they mix in Rex Burkhead, who's got more red zone carries over the previous 3 weeks than Damian Harris.
So this is one of those things where, you know, DraftKings kind of, well, they do this on purpose, but the minimum salary for running backs used to be $3,000. And if the minimum salary was still $3,000, I think Rex Burkhead would be like $3,800 instead of $4,600. And I would actually say Rex might be a little bit playable on DraftKings if he was $3,800, but you know, you just like absolutely cannot touch him at $4,600.
Yeah. So that's a no for me.
That's a no for me, Doug. Heading now to Atlanta at New Orleans. I feel like we're going to get into a good debate here because the way that we have it projected on dailyroto.com right now, it doesn't make Jameis Winston, you know, some screaming value, right? We actually have him projected a little bit worse than someone like Drew Lock because we don't have him projected to take all the snaps at quarterback, right? We have Taysom Hill projected for about 8 DraftKings points, right? So he's stealing away a sizable chunk of the quarterback points. You know, make it 4 or 5 points, basically. And if you put those on Jameis Winston, he would look a lot stronger in terms of projections. I think there is a strong chance this projection ends up looking bad, not because Taysom won't get some of those stupid touches that he gets, but I wish I could attribute them right now. But I saw someone make this point that, you know, when Drew Brees goes out, Taysom actually becomes a little bit more important because then he is the direct backup quarterback, and it's a little bit more important to have him, you know, not play, you know, like being a punt gunner, basically. So I'm in on Jameis this week, and I'm in on this game, and it's possible it's stupid, so maybe talk me out of it.
Well, I guess first in tournaments, it just comes down to the popularity of the play, because range of outcomes, I mean, we've got it projected like 80, 85% of the snaps for Jameis, 15, 20 for Taysom, including Taysom taking some high-value red zone snaps, and that's definitely possible, and it seems very likely. I mean, Taysom's got like 20% usage inside the red zone with Drew Brees in there, so an uptick in that wouldn't be surprising. But sure, it's also possible that Jameis takes 100% of the passing attempts and that Taysom doesn't get there in like the, you know, 5 or 6 touches he gets in the red zone, and they're able to connect on some big plays. So if Jameis is like 2-3%, if Michael Thomas is single digits, then definitely interested in that situation in tournaments. But if you're talking about like projection, if you're talking about putting a quarterback into a cash game lineup, I just don't think you can trust Jameis this week because Taysom's been used regardless of whether or not it was Drew Brees. And then I guess the other notch in like against Jameis would just be this is a team that likes to run the ball. They've run the ball 46% of plays, which is a top 10 rate in the league anyways, and they are favored. It's not like they're all of a sudden going to open up the offense and turn it over to Jameis, who's one of the most turnover prone quarterbacks in the league. So I expect to see a lot of Latavius Murphy, a lot of Kamara in this game anyways.
So I guess probably what I would be worried about is I don't actually have any concerns of Jameis, like, you know, playing like a game manager. I think Jameis is who Jameis is. The thing I would be worried about is like, he's a relatively thin play anyways. So like if he's 8% owned, it's a, like, and Michael it's Thomas bad. Is 15% owned, it's a disaster. Like it is like inexcusably bad. So I guess I will be paying very close attention to kind of how much steam he gets over the rest of the week.
And I mean, Jameis, you need to double stack. If you're going to go down the route of like buying into Jameis is putting up 25 plus DK points, like you got to stack him with Michael Thomas, Manny Sanders, Jared Cook, kind of fill multiple positions. And those guys are all pretty cheap. Jameis obviously himself. And then I guess on the Atlanta side, his question is Calvin Ridley going to play? What's that going to do to the target distribution for Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley? And I guess to an extent at the tight end position, if you wanted Hayden Hurst, but What's your read on Ridley, and are you doing like a full-on onslaught of this game, bringing it back and hoping for like the old school Saints Superdome shootout?
My read is that Ridley does not play, and that actually opens up the game stack a little bit more, lets you gamble on Zacchaeus, lets you gamble on Hayden Hurst. Especially because the tight end position is it. I don't even know if we've mentioned a tight end's name other than Mark Andrews at this point through the show. It's the worst the tight end position has ever been. Last thing on this game, Taysom Hill, tight end eligible on FanDuel. What do you do? I mean, he's going to be 30% or higher owned in MME. Do you just lock him? Like, what do you do?
You think he'll be 30%? I mean, you don't play that. You can't play him at 30%.
I think 30% is kind of where you have to start thinking about it. But if it's like 25%, you're gonna be miserable. Like, because it just tight end is so bad. Like, it would be different if Kelce and Kittle and Zach Ertz and, you know, Mark Andrews was good or whatever. But it's like, no tight end is good. I was doing some stuff for Sports Grid this week for seasonal fantasy stuff. There are 8 tight ends averaging 10 or more PPR points per game, and one of them is Kittle, who's dinged up, and only 4 of them are on this slate period. Like, it is so bad that I think tight end, like Taysom's 20% chance at a tight end or a touchdown makes him the best tight end play.
Man, I mean, that's pretty tough because there are some... I mean, Mark Andrews, there are some tight ends here, and I just feel like I feel like you're trying to like walk both sides of the fence here. You're pro Jameis, but you're pro Taysom, and it's feeling a little bit of disconnect in the
matter. It's on different sites, right? Because on DraftKings, I like the idea of gambling on a 3% on Jameis, but on FanDuel, if you tell me in the lottery stuff on FanDuel, I can play 1% owned, 17% owned Taysom, I would just play 100%.
Yeah, I think that's pretty bad. I would probably be closer to clicking an X than playing 100% there.
All right. Well, I'll have to think. I'm pretty sure I'm right. I'm pretty sure that it's better.
I think he's a good, like a reasonable play. Like, I do think he'll get like four or five looks inside the red zone. So he can definitely convert one of those. And if you get a touchdown, but it's hard to, unless you believe he's going to take over an actual quarterback position, which we didn't really give as a realistic scenario, then it's hard to see him putting up like 15, 16, 17 points.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, so our next game here, Cincinnati at Washington. I got to say, there is a little bit of public steam on like, Smith and J.D. McKissick. I have one play from this game that I really like, and it's Antonio Gibson, and I think he might be my favorite GPP play of the week because he is leverage against all of these idiotic plays, right? He's leverage against Alex Smith. He's leverage against Giovanni Bernard on the other side of this game. If Joe Mixon doesn't play, he's leverage on J.D. McKissick, like huge leverage on J.D. McKissick.
No. You think people are playing McKissick?
Yes, 100%.
I don't think they're going
to
get
it. He just had a 15-target game. I'll guarantee it. I'll guarantee he gets to 8% or whatever.
Oh, 8% maybe. Sure. I would think it's closer to like 5. But like, I guess, I mean, in general, the slate's not going to have a bunch of funneled ownership to one spot. So I just wanted to make sure you don't think McKissick is going to get funneled like a ton of ownership, just more than he should.
Yeah, more than he should. And I think it neglects the idea, like, or it just like what we know is that Gibson is the upside guy here because he's more athletic and he gets the goal line touches.
And we've seen big plays, big weeks from similar profile players. And I think Gibson is like 55% of the team's carries over the past few weeks as well. So definitely seeing an uptick. And it's almost like the DeAndre Swift, right, narrative chasing the breakout game there. So I can see it. I think it's potential to be a pace-up game, but I guess that's why everyone's talking about it. I mean, the Bengals are a very stackable offense as well. The volume of plays that they're running and then how pass-heavy they've been against the Washington football team, I think it's a pretty good spot. The football team defense, I think, is pretty interesting for those same reasons, just Joe Burrow. Expecting a lot of opportunities for them to pressure the quarterback and generate sacks. And so I think that the football team D at 2,900 is definitely a play that is worth consideration too.
Yeah. And then on the Bengals side, I mean, Tyler Boyd and T Higgins seem like fine plays, like break even. I'm not, you know, it's like whatever to me. I'm not jamming them in. I would prefer to play any Steelers wide receiver over them, I think.
Dude, the Cincinnati stuff is ridiculous because like they continue to target AJ Green and
yeah, but you just don't even have to, like, it's great because he's so bad. He's literally a player that's so bad you just don't even have to like worry about it. Like, just don't click. It's fine.
Wild. It's It's wild.
Yeah. Okay, moving on now to Philadelphia at Cleveland. I think there is like a decent chance that this ends up being a good daily fantasy game for a couple different reasons.
Oof.
First, I don't think either of the defenses are actually good. I think they're both very fake good, and that's kind of keeping the total down. Jalen Reagor's very cheap. Jarvis Landry's very cheap. Miles Sanders is inexpensive. Nick Chubb is a little bit priced up, and you could argue that he would just be like a good one-off play. And then we have Austin Hooper for the Browns as well. We know that the Eagles go super pass heavy when they trail. Like they completely give up on establishing the run when they trail. So I actually have a little bit of interest in some of the pieces in this game.
I want almost nothing to do with this game. I think the price tag on Dallas Goedert and DK, 3,800. I know he like lost targets to Richard Rodgers, but maybe Zach Ertz will come back and then Zach Ertz will be the guy that doesn't get targeted at all. Goedert at least a few weeks removed from that injury now and starting to see the uptick in snaps. And so I feel like the targets will funnel that way eventually. The price tag is pretty appealing on him. I agree the Reagor price tag is nice as well. But overall, Wentz does have a lot of different options to distribute it to now. They're not expected to score a ton of points. And so that makes it really unappealing from a stacking perspective. And then the Brown side too. I just can't figure out where I would want to go. I expect this game to go run heavy on the Cleveland side and kind of take a lot of the fantasy goodness out of that game. So a one-off piece maybe from the Eagles, but otherwise pretty much out on this game.
So as far as Nick Chubb goes, I mean, he is one of these classic, like, you know what? Nick Chubb is just off-brand Derrick Henry, right? He doesn't really get any usage in the passing game, and he gets lots and lots of his value from breaking off long runs. But at the same time, it feels like defenses are incapable of stopping him from breaking off long runs.
I mean, it does feel like that. Like, they split carries 50-50 last week, right? Him and Kareem Hunt, but they ran the ball 40 times. A lot of that was weather driven. And if that game wasn't set up in the scenario where both teams are going to just run the ball repeatedly at each other, I don't think people are even talking about Nick Chubb at that price tag. There's not really a timeshare passed in. So if you played Chubb last week, you ran pretty bad because you got all the workload and then he steps out at the one, but I don't think you can go back there.
So I think you can. I think that he has, yeah, I mean, I do. I think he has big dog-ish upside pretty much every single week where you know
like
he's getting
the workload, though.
Except big dog doesn't, this season anyway, he's not getting the monstrous amount of carries. Like, he's not getting 30 because they're giving Donta Foreman and those guys some work,
too. He's, like, locked into 20, whereas I feel like Chubb's, like, locked into, like, 12 with upside for 20.
No, 15 to, like, 25, I think, is especially if Carson Wentz goes full Wentz in this game and is just whelping around. I mean, the Browns could run the ball 50 times in this game. But I do like Reagor and Jarvis Landry as a little mini one-to-one correlation, kind of like Fuller and Myers from earlier. A game seems fine, whatever. Detroit-Carolina, I mean, I guess the one guy who seems interesting to me relative to like just play him at his projection or whatever is Mike Davis, because What if we finally get like week 6 Mike Davis again, where he gets 18 carries and 7 targets and the goal line work again? And I mean, after the dud last week, Mike Davis is going to be 6% owned probably.
Yeah, it was obviously a tough dud, especially just the way that the pricing worked out last week. And we were for sure over Mike Davis on compared to the market. And it was for sure the market getting it right and Mike Davis going even under that. But he was going to be a popular play regardless. And so I don't think the inputs were that bad for Mike Davis. Maybe he got like funneled a couple carries away to back running backs that we didn't project that maybe we're factoring in this week. But a lot of it was just them not running as many plays. So, I mean, I think Mike Davis, you can kind of play at the projection. I still think you're going to end up in like a 5% territory on him based on where we have him currently projected. And I don't know if the quarterback situation a little bit up in the air for Carolina. Likely Teddy Bridgewater goes.
I actually think it seems like we're going to get the PJ Walker, Will Greer tandem. As of Thursday morning, Teddy was still limping around.
Yeah. So, I mean, that I think shakes things up a little bit. I think the total we've got for them right now is like 23.5. Obviously, if that total were to drop, I'm not sure how much it would drop, maybe a point or two at most, but Robbie Anderson and DJ Moore, like, you're still considering these guys. They're still 6K or cheaper on DK, and there's still a pretty good likelihood that one of them is able to go off. And so I like both those guys as one-off plays in tournaments more so than a game that you're looking to stack. Kenny Golladay, I guess the other big news, expected to be back for Detroit.
Yeah, Kenny Golladay is going to be back. And then I guess, you know, the name of the week is DeAndre Swift, who is just going to project to be stone cold chalk. If the usage holds, he is probably a little bit underpriced. But I mean, DK did give him a price hike up to 6,400. I have to say, I love DeAndre Swift, but I don't think I love playing him at, you know, 21% owned in single entry stuff.
Yeah, if that's true and that's where it holds, it definitely feels thin. I would say there has been an uptick, and he was always getting the past like 4 or 5 weeks getting high value touches, but he's still what, like 60% of the team's carries over the past couple weeks. And so I don't think we're talking about an offense that has moved entirely away from utilizing Adrian Peterson and Kerryon Johnson.
Yeah, I agree. So gonna be having to pay attention to that peon for DeAndre Swift.
Now Kenny G, it's like $600 cheaper, and he'll be like half a third of the ownership.
Oh, I mean, yeah, Kenny G will be 1% owned in whatever contest you play. Like, he is completely out of the zeitgeist for DFS this week. The next game, the New York Jets at the Los Angeles Chargers. Justin Herbert projected as our highest projected quarterback right now. Don't know if that will hold. Keenan Allen, always a strong play. I don't have anything original or interesting to say about those guys, but Kalen Ballage, 28-point team total at home. Troymaine Pope got no offensive snaps last week, played only special teams. Ballage now 2 straight weeks of being the lead back. Revenge game, bad, bad Jets defense. What are we doing, bud?
It's tough, man. It's been like 3 or 4 weeks now out of 10, so a pretty substantial time that I've tried to buy into one of these lead backs for the Chargers, and it just hasn't panned out. I'm fine playing him like as projected. I'm not going to treat it necessarily like a workhorse situation. Don't necessarily trust the coach speak either. Revenge game is fine. If he's modest ownership, I think his price is still pretty cheap under 6K, and on FanDuel still pretty cheap as well. So I think I'd be comfortable playing up to like the market. If the market's at like 10%, if it creeps a lot higher than that, probably getting a little bit away from it.
I don't think he gets there. I think that it's unlikely that, because he's Kalen Ballage. I literally think the fact that people have so much negative bias there with him keeps him from getting there. If you were going to stack Herbert and Hunter Henry and Keenan Allen, which Jet would you use as a bring back? Crowder, Perryman, or Mims?
Oof. I mean, that's a tough one. The Crowder price has finally creeped up, like 6,100, where he's got to have a really good game. He can't necessarily just put up like the Jameson Crowder experience, like 6 for 60, and you're fine with it. So I think I'd probably go with Mims and just take like the 3,300 and hope you find the end zone. But if not, it's fine. You didn't pay a lot for like the blank spot in your lineup.
Yeah. I like Mims a little bit. I'll be on the record as liking Mims a little bit. I think he's got just a smidgen of upside. Not a ton, just a smidgen.
Yeah. Like, so are you, I guess, is it like the rookie hype? Is it the fact that they are behind? Or, I mean, the fact that there's three of them now, like Mims is like 24% of targets over the previous 4 weeks, but you do have Crowder back eating up a lot of those. And so, like, if he gets 7, 8 targets, I think it's fine for that price for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I just think Mims is like better than Perryman, and I think that a lot of Crowder's targets historically have been because he's only played with other bad wide receivers. Like, he's played with bad boundary wide receivers who couldn't get open, and I don't think Perryman and Mims are that. I think that they can get open against other, you know, NFL quality corners. So that's why I'm kind of off of Crowder. I think Crowder in his career has gotten a lot of unearned targets. Not that he's not good, but just that he was the best of a bad lot. And I don't think that's true. It's, you know, these guys are not Jeff Smith and Josh Malone, right? Like, I think they're a little bit better.
Maybe a little
okay.
Bit.
Yeah. The Miami Dolphins at Denver Broncos. Salvin Ahmed, I mean, this guy is 4,800, 2 straight weeks of being a lead back. He's basically playing Miles Gaskin's role. He's cheap. And I'll just guarantee your opponents do not care about playing him. He will not, he will be a total afterthought in this slate. And the Broncos, by the way, suck. I mean, mean, they can't score on anyone. And they just, in every game, they get down 14 points in the first half, it feels like. And the Dolphins don't really want to expose Tua at this point, like early. So yeah, they are more than happy to run the ball 40 times a game.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And I think the passing game usage is a little bit different. Maybe not quite getting what Gaskin was getting. And I guess that's the pause, right? But the price is really nice. And it is a slate where you need that. And so I think he's in play. The other guy I wanted to talk about a little bit was Devontae Parker, who, you know, they did lose Isaiah Ford via trade. They lose Preston Williams due to injury. And now you've got a situation where Parker is back to sort of being the alpha in the offense. They haven't run a ton of plays. They haven't run a ton of passing plays, but he is getting 28% of the team's targets. And like you said, the Broncos do, in fact, suck.
They do. They're not good. I mean, the reason why I wouldn't be that interested in Parker is just, I just don't know how, you know, I just don't know if this game is going to end up being meaningful, right? Like, I just don't know if they're going to have to try.
What about Tua? So 5,800, I wanted to get your thoughts on him. And then on the Denver side, you got KJ Hamler, who's been spam targeted the past 2 weeks. Not sure it can sustain there, but some interesting options.
No, Hamler, I would play. Hamler, I would play. Sure, because Fant has this ankle injury, I think, that just keeps him from being really highly targeted. And Hamler, to me, he seems like the guy who just is able to get open most often. Like, he just gets open more often than the other guys do. So let's move on now, though, to two of the higher total games of the week. Green Bay at Indianapolis. I know you're ready to tout Phillip Rivers and T.Y. Hilton. But I mean, Aaron Jones, Devontae Adams, and Michael Pittman, all three of those guys look like super strong plays to me for this game.
Isn't it a little wild that this game is one of the highest totals on the slate? Just like optically, I feel like the Packers have obviously been good, but the Colts have such a strong defense. And I didn't expect to see this game being one of the ones with the 50 plus total.
I mean, it's just a total throwback slate. This is a 2017 slate, one game over 50. The Packers are involved. Aaron Rodgers matters again. It's just a big throwback slate, you know?
Yeah. Like Pittman, I think is a reasonable play. I think the talent's there. He's got like 20% of targets over the previous 2 weeks. So I was definitely in the first game back, I was like pensive, didn't really play a lot of him. In that showdown slate week 9, I was still a little bit apprehensive and what the usage would be, or week 10 rather. And then after seeing two consecutive weeks leading the team targets, I think definitely believing in Pittman, not a core play by any means, but 4,500 is a pretty nice price. I don't think I can touch a running back though in this team. Like, are you going to play Nyheim Hines?
No, I don't think you can touch a Colts running back, but I think there's going to be a little bit of flop leg this week with Aaron Jones, where he could have had a good week last week. They never had to get out of second gear basically last week. So I actually think Aaron Jones looks like one of the stronger tournament plays at running back, because he's also one of those guys, you know, he has a 30 fantasy point ceiling. Like, you just know he can do that. So I think Aaron Jones to me, and he offers leverage on Devontae Adams, who looks like he's probably going to be, you know, the most popular wide receiver this week.
And then it sounds like Doyle's going to miss again. So both Mo Alie-Cox, Trey Burton are extremely cheap. So you're looking upon a tight end. Those are pretty decent options this week.
Yeah. All right. So our final game here, Dallas Cowboys at the Minnesota Vikings. This is my favorite game of the week for a couple different reasons. First, you know, Dalvin Cook, obviously, just the stone chalk, will be the highest owned player by a good degree. And the Dallas passing game and Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen and Kirk Cousins and Andy Dalton and Kyle Rudolph and Dalton Schultz, these guys all offer direct leverage off of the most important, you know, the most owned player of the slate. Both of the defenses, I don't want to say bad, because both of them have actually had better results over the last 2 weeks, but like, either one of these defenses could give up 34 points and you wouldn't blink an eye. You'd be like, yeah, these defenses aren't very good. That can just happen. And there is not as much of a penalty this week in using a pass-only quarterback, because Kyler, because Russ, because Josh Allen, because those Patrick Mahomes, not on the slate. So some of those, you know, 45-point ceilings at quarterback are totally removed from the slate, so there's less of a penalty in playing Andy Dalton and Kirk Cousins this week.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. The price on Cook is a struggle, because he could put up 27 points and you're like, okay, that's good, but is it good enough? I don't know. It might be for tournaments, but like to break the slate open, he has to do what he's done a couple times over the past couple weeks. So, I mean, Cook, obviously a very good play. The salary just makes it really tough. And that makes it tough to do. One of the rules that I think is reasonable, and you could consider this, is to play at least one of Dalvin Cook, Adam Thielen, Justin Jefferson. Because if you go back even to last year when they had Thielen Diggs going with Cook, and you're getting like 15, 16, 17 point floors out of these guys. And like you said, great game environment. Multiple of them could get there, but it's extremely unlikely that all three of those players fail. So I like that as a consideration for like three max, playing, mixing and matching those guys, potentially stacking Cousins makes sense as well. And I mean, the Cowboys have run more plays than any team in the NFL, and they've been willing to continue to do that with bad quarterbacks. So with Andy Dalton back, it does feel like they could potentially put together a more competent offensive performance, and the skill pieces are still priced down from kind of what they've been doing with these like D3 quarterbacks over the past few weeks. So definitely an interesting game to stack.
Yeah. And I think that Lamb super cheap, Cooper super cheap. I mean, Gallup is 3,800, right? And then it's not like Justin Jefferson just had that absurd game on Monday night, and he didn't, you know, he's not really all that priced up either. And then, you know, something you and I always talk about is like, you just want to correlate the tight end spot to the game that you're stacking, because it's the worst position ever. Like, tight ends are just so brutal this year. And if Irv Smith Jr. doesn't play, never thought I'd say these words, but Kyle Rudolph, a little bit playable. And Dalton Schultz to me, too, as well. I mean, if you're going to be playing stacks in this game. And this, I mean, people maybe think we're being a little bit hyperbolic about the tight end position. Right now, on DailyRoto.com, we have four players projected for over 10 DraftKings points. We have two players projected as positive values, and one of them is Mike Gesicki, who, like, I think literally has max one reception for each of his last six games. And it's so, you know, these guys like Kyle Rudolph, like Mo Alie-Cox, like Noah Fant, like Trey Burton, you know, basically just as game stack fillers and to correlate with that game environment, I think is really strong. So now is the part of the show where we give our favorite game stack to use in daily fantasy tournaments this weekend. And mine on DraftKings, it is going to be the Jameis Winston plus two of his teammates. And I do think, by the way, that can include Alvin Kamara, because we would expect if Alvin Kamara has a GPP winning game, at least one of those touchdowns is a receiving touchdown. And, you know, the great thing about using Kamara is he can take one of those screen passes 70 yards and just pad those stats for his quarterback. So, you know, you throw Alvin Kamara, Michael Thomas, Jared Cook, Manny Sanders, and I think even Traquan Smith as well. In there. And then the bringbacks are great, right? It's Julio Jones. It is probably Olamide Zaccheaus and Hayden Hurst. And, you know, this is just one of those classic NFC South shootouts. Well, it's not actually projected that way. This is actually a super low total for a Superdome game, but we all know it can get there. This is not my highest confidence stack of all time, for sure.
Yeah, and it's a big range of outcomes game where I don't think we'd be shocked if Jameis gets vultured either. So let ownership kind of guide you a little bit there. And then for me, I'm going to go in Minnesota. Perfect game to stack as leverage off of Dalvin Cook is to stack up Kirk Cousins with Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen. I think you could include Cook in that mix if you want to, because he gets like 15% or more of the team's targets, and he can take them to the house as well. But I like stacking Cousins with two wide receivers there. Trust that Dalton can keep the game somewhat competitive rather than like a run heavy blowout for the Vikings. Maybe they even get up early. And so the price tags on Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb compared to their talent are extremely strong. And I don't expect Andy Dalton to become a Pro Bowler overnight, but I do think he can deliver a more competent quarterback performance than what we've seen from the previous quarterbacks for the Cowboys.
Yeah. I mean, look, Andy Dalton has had time in the NFL as being an effective quarterback, and it's come with his offensive line has played better, but it's also come with really good wide receivers. He has really good wide receivers, and also it's a little bit of faith in Kellen Moore, that Kellen Moore took this time over the bye week, you know, whatever, he figured it out. He got it inside his own head, and he figured out a plan for the Cowboys to score some points. I think that probably a big chunk of my entries this weekend are going to be these two stacks, the Saints stack, the Falcons stack, the Vikings stack, and the Cowboys stack. And honestly, the Vikings Cowboys one is probably better, because as we talked about in the last segment, it does give that just that massive leverage off of, you know, it does give that massive leverage off of Dalvin Cook. So everyone, thank you very much for watching and listening to the Daily Roto Hour and the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. Make sure to go to dailyroto.com for more NFL DFS content, and we will see you back next week.
Build digital-first customer relationships with Salesforce Digital 360. Connect every marketing, commerce, and digital experience on a single platform. Innovate fast with easy-to-launch sites, campaigns, and apps. That's more relationships, more revenue, more return, and more success. Salesforce Digital 360. Hear from our customers at sfdc.co/digital360.